Coming up next on Community Voices, we speak with Vic from Bayfield Mortgage.
And Vic was actually our very first conversation in the project.
And when we talked to Vic, we quickly learned how interesting this project was going to be.
Let's give a listen.
You are?
I'm Vic Hamilton.
And you run?
I own and run Discover Mortgage, operating as Bayfield Mortgage. I have been in Salmon Arm and operating for 25 years now, and I've been operating as a mortgage broker and in the real estate field for just over 33 years.
Great, and you're located on?
We are here on 181 Hudson Avenue, just right below the yoga studio and right across the road from Hungry Panda.
Have you always been here?
We've been here now 10 years, and we did start out originally in cooperation with Lakeside Insurance. I rented an office from them when they were still with Greg Boecker way back, which is now Sanctuary Games in that location, and then we moved with Lakeside across the highway, and then we came to this location 10 years ago.
So basically, what do you do here?
We have been running a mortgage broking operation that specializes in small towns throughout British Columbia and here in the Shuswap. We sell mortgages, that means to banks, as well as provide private funding for those who need alternative services. We also provide niche products like commercial lending and reverse mortgages as well.
The last few years have been a little on the rough side as far as the whole world goes.
Yeah.
Did that affect you at all?
Interesting. We thought it was going to affect us quite dramatically. In fact, when we first got the word of the shutdown, we started developing contingency plans for the financial survival of the business. And within about 6 months' time, we realized that just the opposite was happening. We had to re-gear very quickly because our business exploded. Probably some of the best years we've ever had, dating back to the mid-2000s.
Has it continued?
No, actually, because we actually benefited from two things. The COVID effect, number one, people, they were getting a little antsy and they thought, let's make some changes in our lives. And that psychographic had a huge impact. But the other thing that really facilitated was the low interest rate environment, which the government created in order to stimulate the economy, fearing that the world was going to fall apart. So that gave us historically low interest rates, down as low as I was selling 5-year close rates down at the 1.75% interest rate, which is just unbelievable. And basically anything below 5% is historically very low. And we were talking about interest rates in around the 2% range. So that really stimulated the real estate market. It just helped it really expand quite rapidly. So that interest rate was the second and more important driver.
So where do you go from here?
Because we've seen such a dramatic slowdown, and we've seen interest rates almost, in some cases, I mean, we're almost triple what we were a year and a half ago. We've seen people having to readjust quite a bit. In fact, the renewals, we get a lot of inquiries on renewals in terms of, is my bank treating me fairly? And we're more than happy to answer that for people. But that's been the big concern. We've also seen a dramatic slowdown in purchases. But that is a bit of a dichotomy, because we also know that there's an awful lot of people who would like to be in a house. We've got a terrible housing shortage on our hands. So it hasn't necessarily crashed the market in any way, shape, or form. It's certainly relaxed certain price brackets through the housing market, but that stimulus is still there in terms of people wanting to buy. Now, when they're going to come back to the market, I would probably suggest late 24. And again, my crystal ball has been smashed a lot of times on the floor here. I'm not a trained economist in any way, shape, or form. I really rely on the data points provided by a series of economists that work at the banks and work for the government and try to make my best judgment from there.
Well, if you've been in business 25 years, you've probably seen a lot of up and downs.
That's a good point, because we're just getting back into the point now where I can start using historical data again to sort of project where my business is going to go and what's going to happen in the market. Over the COVID years, we basically tossed those in the dumpster because you couldn't use historical planning. In fact, it was just all skewed. I've never seen anything like it in 33 years. Actually, quite honestly, going back into the early 80s when we had the massive recession, that is, and I was still quite young, is probably the only comparison to what's happened in terms of dramatic events in the financial markets and the real estate markets.
What's your take on the recent effect of the fires that we've had this summer?
It paused business because of we see it more from a functional standpoint. Where it paused business because you weren't able to get insurance. We don't get too much pushback from banks. They're very understanding. If in particular Saskia, they just absolutely knock the socks off of the in terms of doing mortgage business here in town. They're one of our big suppliers, and they are very understanding. They're just a great organization. Very happy to present their products through our network. The big banks generally don't have too much of a concern. But it's about the insurance. That's what slows things down for us. An awful lot of what's going on in the North Shore doesn't really impact our business, because those that are insured will deal directly with their insurance companies, and then it's more a matter of finding a builder to recreate what they had there before. It's a good point to mention, though, because in the private market, when you're talking about going into sourcing private funds for those people who need alternative sources of funding, and that's a big part of our business here, it represents at least 35% of what we do. And that's throughout the province. That's just not here in Salmon Arm. We're talking about Cache Creek all the way to Fort St. John, out into the Kootenays. We do an awful lot of work outside this area. And our investors, especially those that are from either Vancouver, Victoria, Toronto in particular, when you get them that are not necessarily used to this area, haven't traveled here, haven't lived here, don't understand the cyclical nature that we get forest fires here, we get lots of snow and ice here for certain times, they don't understand. They think the world's falling apart. They only have that small news bites that are fed to them, which becomes problematic, because you have to re-explain to them, no, this is part of our culture here. We understand that forest fires are part of the natural cycle. To some extent, when we have dry seasons, they're getting worse. But we need to adapt to that as humans, and we just adapt our business model. So on the private side, there's a lot of explaining to do, and every summer it comes up, and people have a short memory. It's never a problem in January to get somebody to lend. You talk about middle of August, they think that your world's ending. Like the fire, was it in Salmon Arm when it was down in Chase? So certainly you do have to work an awful lot harder to dispel the myths and present the actual data that's going on. So it is a challenge.
That's super interesting.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Do you get much walk-in traffic here?
That's a good point. Yeah, we do, actually, and we welcome it. That's one of the reasons that we're here. Most mortgage brokers, if you go to Vancouver, they're doing business out of the coffee shop or out of somebody's living room, and we just don't function that way. My methodology has always been one that we need to present a professional image, and that includes having a really nice office and having it accessible to walk-by traffic. Part of our advertising strategy is to have the Bayfield Mortgage sign right across the window out front so everybody sees it, and to do a nice job for the downtown as well, to have a very appealing exterior and be part of the culture here in downtown Salmon Arm. Walk-in traffic is good. A lot of people just have questions, and we're more than happy to answer them. We've got two reps, and we're welcoming a third one in a few weeks' time. He's a seasoned professional that's joining the industry. So we've got lots of manpower here to answer questions.
My dad's first job in town here was mortgage consultant for Neville Hutton at Shoeshot Realty. This is going back late 70s.
He'd be in the early days if he was doing that. That's terrific. You know, Bayfield Mortgage, one of the reasons we joined them was I met the founder, Gord Wintrup, when I was visiting a friend down in Penticton. And that organization was just top notch. Gord started out in the business in 1973, the second MIC fund, or Mortgage Investment Corporation, in the province. And they dealt more or less specifically in private funds, because back then the banks really weren't participating too much in the broker network or in any kind of a broker system. You've got to remember that the broker world in the early 90s, it wasn't too prevalent. There was the odd person doing it, maybe getting you a quarter point off listed or a half point off. Then the market started to really explode in terms of a lot more brokers came into the business, people became more organized, and the A side of the business basically evolved in the mid-90s to late 90s, and that's when the banks started getting these huge discounts, and other what we call monoline players came into the market seeing some blue water. And those monolines meaning that they don't have a physical presence, they're just bricks and mortar, they're marketing machines, and they offer really low rate mortgages. And then, of course, the banks in turn have to compete. So basically, there was very little competition on rates prior to the early 90s. That just didn't exist. You had to be a great customer and had to know the manager, and you could maybe get that quarter point off. It was just a different paradigm or different way of doing business. So he was in the forefront, definitely being in the late 70s. He's one of the ones that, you know, sort of broke the ice for the rest of us.
Yeah, he ended up with Shoe Shop Insurance quite a number of years ago.
So. Oh, gosh. That's interesting. Yeah. It's great to know that somebody was actually in this town doing that at that point in time, because Salmon Arm was quite small then. So that's fascinating.
So are you originally from this area? Or?
Sort of interesting there. No, we were, prior to this, I was in Penticton. I grew up in Penticton, graduated from Penn High, and came to the area. Actually, my wife was recruited here for a job, and I thought, well, what the heck? We had some relatives here that lived out on the lake, and I thought, pretty nice place. Let's give it a go. At that time, we didn't have a family, and fell in love with Salmon Arm. We had our family here, and I can't imagine a nicer community to raise children in. It's so convenient and so nice, and quite honestly, so safe relative to others. But speaking about connections to the community, the other thing that we have is that my great-grandparents and my grandparents moved here in 1911. He was, at that time, we called him the Tinker. He was a mechanical engineer or pattern maker, and he traveled the lines up and down and all through the area, setting up pulp mills and sawmills as far away as Ocean Falls. Actually, we found some of his names stamped into equipment out there. So we actually go back a fair ways in Salmon Arm. They moved out of the area just around about 1920 down to Vancouver, but... Yeah, early beginnings.
Yeah, so they must have been almost like pioneers here.
At that point in time, there wasn't much here. Yeah. No, my grandma describes it as being pretty much the Wild West and walking into town along the tracks. And, yep, lots of interesting stories and being on the steamers on the lakes as well.
Do you have any of those stories that you could share sometime?
I could probably research a few of them, yes.
We have a show called Discovering and Sharing Shuswap History. So any stories from way back would be just fabulous to have on that show.
Certainly.
What would you like to see, or what would you hope for the downtown core business community?
I think the next step is probably to go the way that some of the other larger communities have gone. At least part of the year, I'd like to see this place open for business and robust. And it's getting there, but to the point where you walk down here at 8 o'clock and it feels like it's still vibrant. That would be my wish right now for the downtown, because really people would start to identify that as sort of the real heart of the community. Right now it's pretty good, but if we can keep that vibrancy up so that it, you know, you walk down here on a Sunday afternoon, used to be you could shoot a cannon down the main street. Right now, you know, there's the odd shop open, there's a Pink Cherry open. I think that it's getting to the point where it's that 7 day a week sort of vibrancy, and I know that of the tourists that I talk to, and being here I get the advantage of seeing quite a few of them and chatting quite a few of them, they all have the same comment: is lovely little town, too bad the sidewalks roll up at 5 p.m. And it's consistent. So that's the only comment that I would say that I'd like to see a change in, is I'd like to strongly encourage people to sort of give it a go. See what happens, especially in those summer months. If it's a tough go round, I'm sure that, you know, the Night Cafe has done a wonderful job, but I can only imagine his trepidation, Adam's trepidation, in terms of, I'm going to do this. I'm going to open late. I'm going to put money in here. It's a big risk. I mean, he's got to put his own skin on the line to do that. That's not been done. And kudos to him. He's done a great job.
It's been quite successful from what I've seen.
Yes. Yeah. And that is the tip of the iceberg. That's wonderful to see that.
You know, I was just mentioning the other day to somebody, I can remember when nothing was open on a Sunday.
Well, you know, you got to remember, if you're going back far enough, like I'm sure that you are as well, the Lord's Day Act was in force. You couldn't open on a Sunday. And I can remember that all opening up in the 80s. You know, liquor stores and pubs allowed to be open on a Sunday. Oh, sacrilege.
Yeah.
So it was great. You know, as a young kid, it's like, oh, this is fantastic. I mean, you couldn't drink, but you just thought that, oh, things, vibrant things are happening. So it was wonderful. My parents, being old school and all the rest of it, were kind of a mixed opinion. And as my mom used to say, the unions fought so hard for weekends and to have time off, and then we're just reopening it again. So there was that, you know, it's a very valid opinion. I was kind of an oops, so my parents were an awful lot older than me. But it gave me tremendous insight into a different way of life that was in the dirty 30s. And, you know, my dad grew up dirt poor on the prairies, Scottish immigrants living in pretty horrible conditions. My mom went through that as well, of course, you know, born in 27. So she went through the dirty 30s as well in Vancouver, and the hobos and the people begging for food outside the door and everything else. But so that kind of led that opinion about, you know, oh my God, this is horrible. It wasn't anything to do with religion. It had everything to do with their perspective on life. We take that for granted, but that's, like, I think one of the reasons that history is so important. So
yeah. No, I agree with you. The weekends, it's a mixed thing, because you want your weekend off because you've worked all week, but then you can't go shopping because you can't go shopping when you're working.
Right. I mean, it's, yes,
it's a,
exactly.
It's a six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah, and a lot of people back then were also, culturally, a lot of people say it's money, but it's really a cultural thing. It's got nothing to do with money. A lot of people culturally were saying, well, the wife is at home, tending to the children because and the house, because, you know, we can't afford a housekeeper, we can't afford a cook, we can't afford daycare. And as my mom put it, she was a stay-at-home mom for most of it, but she said, if we could have afforded it, if that was possible, of course I would have stayed at work. She was educated, she had her degree, she would have loved to stay at work. But the bottom line was, when she got pregnant, the boss came around and said, okay, when will you be leaving work so we can post the position? It was horrible. And if she wanted to go back to work, she could only find secretarial work. She couldn't find management or administration work at that time. This would have been in the 50s because, well, you're just a woman at work, and is that really proper? So the only time she ever got offered a decent job was, she had an aunt who worked at the British Embassy in New York, and she said, well, you can come out here and work. So the Yanks were ahead of us.
Fancy that.
Yeah, but that single family household thing really, yeah, had a big bearing. And now you've got people with two incomes and two jobs to maintain, and they're going, well, I work, you work, when are we going to shop? You know, you're doing it Monday to Friday, you're going to get stressed because, okay, before I pick the kids up, I have to do this, this, and this, and this. And, you know, that's one of the nice things about, I mentioned about bringing up a family in Salmonar and being a dual income family, is the fact that it's 3 minutes over to the daycare, 2 minutes over to the store, another 2 minutes to the high school. What a great little town.
Yeah, I agree with that. I lived in Vancouver for a period of time, and I lived in Abbotsford, but everything was in Vancouver.
Have you even been to Pitt Meadows and Maple Ridge lately? It's we were just there a few weeks ago, and I was just appalled at the traffic levels. Appalled. It wasn't bad. It was horrendous. I mean, downtown Vancouver is bad. Yeah, downtown Vancouver is easier.
Yeah, no, I was really glad to move back. And the difference in traffic, I mean, this was 30 years ago, but I'd go back to Vancouver to visit friends, and I'd spend 3 days there and just be crazy, come home and relax with the traffic.
The only way I want to go to Vancouver right now is if I get to drive all the way into downtown Vancouver, park my car in a parkade, and forget about it for 2 or 3 days. The one thing that's always of constant concern down here is access and parking. Unlike a lot of places where you can ride your bike and that, we've got 5 months of the year where we have nasty weather. And the malls really have it over on us right now in terms of people have the sense, oh, free parking at the mall, I'll go there. It's never free. Those people that rent space down there are paying a premium. I mean, it's built in. Down here, we pay taxes instead of paying rent and you know, the city hall. And I'm on the parking committee, so I don't want to get too deep into this. I've been in there for years, but parking is our number one challenge down here by a landslide, and it's not kept up. In fact, if anything, I would tend to say that if you looked at our parking situation from 30 years ago till today, versus on the number of people living in town versus the number of sites available in the downtown core, you would see a declining curve in that ratio. It's not what I would call very positive, because if you want to know a business complaint that I've got, and many people have, and that my clients have, and that would be from May till October, without question, they come in here and they say, the parking is awful. I've had to illegally park. I've had to do this. I couldn't get parking. I'm sorry I'm late. We had to park across the highway. It's a constant struggle. And if you want a downtown, if you want businesses, to maintain the storefronts like mine, if you want interesting things, if you want tourists, you've got to look after that parking. Take a quick trip down to someplace like Seaside, Oregon. They are the poster boy for doing it right. It's a different flavor. There's no question. You can't make a direct comparison. But just go there sometime or go to another city, explore what they're doing. That's a smaller town. And Seaside, Oregon knocks my socks off. It's all free. They've got parkades. They've got directional signs. They say, welcome, welcome. No, you stay as long as you want. And in a perfect world, that would be ideal. But of course, you know, each town has to figure out their own solution. This town has grown tremendously since we first started here. And when I started business right there 25 years ago, not so bad. We've gained probably 8,000 people in population since then. And the downtown has gone from run down to beautiful. So it's a huge problem. You know, the parking committee does their bit. And for those of us that pay our taxes down here, we pay the rent, we want to see a lovely downtown. I mean, I really enjoy working downtown. You've got to back it up. You do. People, unfortunately, this idea of using, oh, everybody's going to use a bike. No, they won't. They need their cars. And like I said, 5 months of the year, you've got awful weather. It's just not feasible. And we live on a hillside, not a flat plain.
You represent the merchants, right?
There's several of us downtown that do that. Gerald does it, is also on it. And a lady from Hub is on it. And there's various people that sort of bring their views. You got to remember they're the ones with the power. They're just there as an advisory committee. They ask us, what do we think? And I mean, unless you're elected, you don't hold the purse strings, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the bottom line. If you really wanted to do something about it, I guess you'd get on council. But I don't think that's a good reason for ever getting on council, because that's like an axe to grind for a special purpose at that point. And these problems that we run into that way.
Yeah. Thank you for that.